Well, we're standing in the Barbara A. Sports spotlight right now because one of our old friends is here in town this week. And very timely, too, since football is just around the corner. The head coach of the team at Indiana Collegiate University, Spike Sturdley.
And, Spike, a real warm welcome is yours from Ray and myself as we see you once again for another season.
How you doing, fans?
How are things at ICU this year?
Well, I think things are looking up. We had a shock here when I sent out the call for first practice. I only had 7 men show up.
A little short of a full team, huh?
That's right. So with a couple of little Shanghai jobs around there, we got a pretty adequate squad of 22 men now.
Is your son going to be playing on the team with you this year?
Yeah, Oliver? Yes.
Yes.
He's going to be quarterback in the team. He's a great little thinker, and I like the way he calls plays, and he works well out of the tee, and he can hit a dive with a football. He's a great passer.
Well, Spike, now last year, your season wasn't all that could have been expected.
No.
By that, I mean, I don't think you won any games, did you?
That's right, Bob. Last year was one of those years that just seems to happen to us almost every year.
What was the reaction of the faculty and the school board when ICU came up with a completely... poor team.
Well, of course, everyone likes to have a winning team represent them down there on the gridiron. Well, I think most of the complaints came from most of the older graduates. The alumni agitated quite a bit for my scalp.
Well, of course, years back, ICU was unbeatable, and then when you came to the school, the record, of course, began going downhill, and it's been going ever since.
More or less coincided with my taking over the head coach activities out there at ICU, that their football...
Well, wasn't part of this all due to the fact that between the halves, you spent no time in the locker room pointing out errors that had been made, suggesting things that could be improved in the second half, that you spent your halftime selling soft drinks and hot dogs in the stands?
See, I have the concession out there at the stadium, and for the hot dogs and the soft drinks, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And rather than talk to the kids at halftime, you know, when they're behind 33-0, there isn't really much you can say to them.
No.
They know they're behind.
They don't want to hear about it all.
They just soon forget it for 10 or 15 minutes and relax. And
sure.
By the same token, I can be out there pushing them hot dogs and trying to make ends meet.
So actually,
no pun intended.
Actually, you don't think that it does affect the overall... team score in the final.
Well, I spend some criticism of my being engaged in that activity in the newspapers. The local papers seem to think... one called me money mad.
Yes, you know, well, I can see where they might.
Like that, but I don't think it's serious.
Well, when's your first game, and who do you play, Spike?
Our first game will be Pulse Normal. That comes up next Saturday. And with all intents and purposes, we're going to show up for the game.
All right, thank you, Head Coach Spike Sturdley of Indiana Collegiate University, and we'll certainly be following the record of ICU this coming season.
Pull down the shade for ICU. Pull down the shades for ICU. As your back goes passing by, I see you fight.
I guess everybody is anxiously awaiting news of whether or not we're going to have the 11-inch gentleman here, and he is sitting right up, bright and cheerful. However, this time, he's asked that we don't mention his name, and I guess I can understand why. You did.
Well, I had so much reaction to the last time I appeared on your show that my wife prevailed upon me to eliminate my name from this particular broadcast. I hope you'll understand.
Well, that's all right. We'll call you then Mr. X. I guess that would be...
That would be suitable. I'll just accept that.
Just to recap your story, you are 11 and a half inches tall. Is that right?
That's right.
In stocking feet, sir, or those little shoes you're wearing?
Well, makes very little difference. The soles of these shoes are so thin that I can stand on a dime and tell you whether it's heads or tails.
Mm-hmm. You told us before that you were engaged in a business of your own. You're very well-to-do. You have a special automobile to travel from one place to another. You lead a comparatively normal life.
As normal a life as an 11-inch man could lead in this day. I've been successful in business, and I have a nice family, and I have all the material things of life that any gentleman would want.
Teddy, I notice you're shifting from one foot to the other. Why don't you sit down in this milk, little milk container here and just relax while you... tell me this, Mr. X. You've been here in New York. You told me on the phone yesterday for several days.
The top was open. I fell through.
Oh, when did you help? I got out of there. There.
Thank you.
How's that?
Awesome.
Is there any milk in there?
Milk on my trouser cuffs here.
Is that a drifter eye suit you're wearing?
It's a miracle fabric, yeah.
I tell you, Mr. X is a fashion plate among our guests. He's always very well dressed, very neat. Right from his little shoes and spats up to his little gloves and tiny hat. What size hat is it that you do wear, sir?
Three.
Size three. Now, I was going to ask you about this trip to New York. You're here buying something for your business, is that right?
Well, I don't want to go into my business again. Ray and Bob, or who are you?
I'm Bob.
Bob. I don't want to go into that again, will you? I'm here, suffice to say, on business, and I think maybe if I mentioned what type of business I was here for, I'd tip my identity, and I don't want to do that.
Well, that's understandable, sir. Have you any plans for vacation?
No, I have adequate facilities at home, do.
I understand you.
I'm not going away. I have
quite a palatial estate.
It's a beautiful home I have, and I have a regulation type pool for my friends, and I have a saucer, a tile saucer submerged in the ground for myself.
Wade
around, swim.
You have your own golf course, too, right? It's miniature, of course.
Yes, it is. It has to be miniature because it would be impossible for me to strike a ball any distance at all.
What is your average drive?
24 inches. 27 inches. I hit one day, but that was right on the nose.
That's a good one, huh? Well, I hope this will dispel all of the queries that we've had from people, disbelievers. And you have heard it once again. Probably for the last time. I hope you don't have to bother you again. But I do appreciate your calling us to suggest that you come up to clear
the
facts.
Well, it's good to talk with you again, Bob.
And Mr. X, will somebody help him down off the table? Not...
I'll help him. Come here. Just jump up into my hand.
Are you jumping up into Ray's hand now?
Bob.
And Ray is...
Pulling him down on the floor.
Putting him down on the floor, and he'll be... you going to stay for the rest of the show? I say you're going to stay for the rest of the... You can't hear me down there. You're going to stay for the rest of the show, Mr. X?
No, I don't believe so. I'll just beat it out of here. Go back to the hotel.
He's leaving. His little mincing four-inch steps, and that is quite a busy stride. There he goes.
Webb, how are you this week? Webley Webster, ladies and gentlemen.
Pretty good, Tiger Bob. And how are you this week?
Fine. We haven't had a book review. Ray was just mentioning to me. We haven't had a book review for several weeks now. And I noticed the players have assembled out there in the studio.
They're all set to go with another dramatic episode of the book I've chosen to review today.
Is this a current bestseller or something new?
No, this is an old classic.
An old classic.
It's Dickens' private cripple panel.
Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Dick White.
Certainly should be appropriate for this.
Well, that's what I thought, Bob, being this season of the year.
Is this the first time you've ever read it, or did you read it?
Oh, no, I've read this, and I've heard it on the radio, and I've seen it in the movies. And
played the record of it.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Well, okay, the players are ready, and I hope that we'll have one of the appropriate scenes.
Yeah, so this particular scene that we've chosen to dramatize, the Webley Webster players, takes place about the third day at sea.
Oh.
And we hear the green old captain call out for the first mate.
But a shipboard.
Matey, my eye's there. Is that any way to be talking to your captain? You ain't your ass up the wall. Oh, taking it easy, Captain.
Across the deck, matey.
I came to bring the felicitations of the crew on this Yuletide season.
Why, you... You good captain, mate? You know better than that, laddie.
All right, Captain.
Want me below for mess, mate?
Well, we're having roast goose for Christmas dinner, Captain.
Why?
Oh.
Maybe from now on you'll be checking with the captain on his choice.
I thought you'd like roast goose, Captain.
I don't want you thinking what the good captain will like. You better check with him first, baby.
The storm looks pretty bad, Captain. Only gonna suggest we all in the main.
Well, that's about it. I think that's probably the most exciting episode in the whole book. Well, I recommend it for the olders and the youngers.
But that is...
Second Purple Powell.
Today
by Sal Biffen.
Book review, Dickens' Christmas Carol with the Webley Webster Players.
An interesting story breaking right outside Radio City here in New York. Wally Ballou to cover it. So come in, please. On the street, Wally Ballou.
Radio's handsome Wally Ballou here at 30 Rockefeller Plaza, heart of the radio industry in New York City. Chatting with one or two of the passers... Hello, Eddie. With one or two of the passers-by. And first of all, a gentleman who seems to stand out from the crowd because of the fact that over his shoulder is slung a balsam fir tree. Could I have your name, please, sir?
Yes, I'm Matthew E. Dineen, and I'm from Rutland, Vermont.
You in the Christmas tree business by any chance, Mr. Dineen?
No, I'm not. I've just come down from Vermont to sell this tree to the Rockefeller Center people for their Christmas decorations.
Well, that tree isn't much more than 6-7 feet tall. They usually have one that's about 4 stories high, you know.
It's 8 feet, but with a stand, it'll probably go 8 feet and a half.
Well, as you notice, they already have a big 75-foot tree there.
But, of course, that grows there all the time. I thought maybe they wanted a Christmas tree here to decorate to give it kind of a holiday flavor.
That tree doesn't grow there all the time. You probably only come to New York for Christmas time.
Right, you're not kidding me.
I know, it's always there when you're here, but it's only at Christmas time. They bring that tree. They brought that one from Vermont. And brought it down on a big flat car truck.
You kid me not?
What's that? I kid you not, sir.
Well,
that tree is brought in for Christmas. Big decorated
I think I paid 10 fishies for this tree. I thumbed my way down to New York with the tree, and I just got off the subway now with it.
Well, I think you're too late for Rockefeller City. You might try Park Avenue, although I think they've got their trees all purchased, too.
Wow.
They're about 20, 25 feet high.
Well, it's beginning to fall now, anyway.
I noticed a lot of the needles are falling off this one. It looks round, kind of.
It is
round. I don't think it'll last until Christmas, actually.
But what do you suggest then I do? Who can I talk with?
You can use any one of the receptacles that you'll find on the street corners for trash. It looks as if it would snap up into small pieces easily. It's pretty...
Yes, I think it would.
Why don't you do that? Just throw it in the trash can.
See, I was out last summer, and I spotted this wonderful tree. It was across the middle of July, and I cut it right down so that I could sell it.
Well, that's the whole problem.
Center people.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have cut it down that... if you'd let it grow there, you might have had a chance that it would be green.
Yeah.
And that's the story from the street at this point. Radio's Wally Ballou, thanking Matthew E. Dineen.
You know, I've already been pinched, taking it on the subway and everything.
Here, seated at our Bob and Ray microphone at this time, is one of the world's outstanding... just a minute, please.
Henrik, the first name.
Henrik. Mr. Henrik Wadley, who hails, I believe, from Cuyahoga Park... Wait, just a minute, Paul.
Cuyahoga Falls.
Cuyahoga Falls,
Ohio.
And who has been billed around this country, and I believe in some foreign countries too, as the world's foremost impersonator of George Brent. Sir, you are a man about, 53 or 54 years old?
That's right.
And may I call you Heinrich?
Henrik.
Henrik. How did you happen...
Well, Henny is... people who know me call me Henny.
How did you happen to take up impersonations? Were you dramatically inclined as a child, or what?
Well, I wouldn't say I was dramatically inclined, Mr. Bob.
Either Mr. Elliot or Bob will be
I'm
fine.
I'm Bob.
You speak up,
Henry,
just a little bit. I said, have you done impersonations ever since childhood, or what?
I remember the question now. No, and I wasn't particularly dramatic. It was just that I saw a George Brent movie once, and... I just thought I'd try to sound like him, and that
could you give us a little bit of George Brent? I think the folks would like to hear just how you go into this in your act.
Well, I say, probably you'll remember this scene from a great movie. And then this is when I do this.
This is what you do.
Well, I'm home. Anything new?
I don't remember the exact movie, but...
I don't either.
Neither does the voice sound too familiar to me. George Brent had quite a deep voice, as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Have you lost the touch for it, or what? I mean...
Well, I've been doing it so long, and naturally, my voice...
How many years have you been impersonating George Brent?
Oh, over 30 years.
Yes.
And, of course, I've put a few gray hairs in my squash in that time, and my voice has changed.
Do you do any other voices?
Helmet Dantine.
Could we hear a little bit of Helmet?
What's going on in here anyway?
Mm-hmm.
That's Helmet.
I see on the card here you do Claude Dauphin, too.
Yeah.
Could you do a little Claude Dauphin for us?
Sure. Well, that's the way it goes, I guess, dear. So long for
We've
now.
We've been chatting with Henny Wadley, the world's foremost impersonator of George Brent, with a few extras thrown in to kind of round out his entertaining. I want to thank you for coming all the way from Cuyahoga Falls, and let us know when your next appearance is.
I certainly will, Mr. Bob.
Hey, Tex, you remember the plan now.
Let's go over it once more.
Well, when the gold train comes up around the bend, you ride out from the underbrush here, jump off our horses, jump out of the train.
Now, wait a minute.
Right away,
you know we're going to have trouble on that.
Why?
We ain't never been able to get off our horses slow-like without jumping off.
Hush up. I think I hear it. I hear it coming there around the bend now.
How are we going to stop the train?
The train will stop when we brandish our revolvers.
You sure about that?
Well, I've always seen it done that way.
All right.
Okay, here she comes. Now, we got to time this good. When the mail car gets right alongside, we ride out. You ready?
You sure now? Then we jump off our horses, eh?
Right.
All right.
She's almost upon us now. All right, let's ride out.
Come on, horse.
Come on, horse.
Come on. Ride out, horse.
There we go. Not too fast, horse. Slow down. Slow down, horse.
This is a hold up.
Hey, this old...
Jump off.
Stop that iron horse. Jump off, hey. This is a hold up. Hey, help me off here.
We'll wait like you off.
Hurry up. That mail car is going to be fired.
Wait like you off.
Hey. Hold up.
It's a hold up.
Hold up.
Here, I got one foot off.
Wait a minute. Let me get your foot in my stirrup.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm riding half your horse and half mine.
Let me get down off.
Half of me is riding my horse and half of
well,
me
now, wait
is riding...
a minute. Who's...
Are you down?
No, I'm just halfway down. Wait a minute.
Oh!
Well,
it ain't much use now. You done gone by.
Help me get back up on my horse here.
Consign the dead burn luck anyway.
We gotta practice getting on and off our horse.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, come on.
I'm sure the sitting duck is pretty close to docking now. And for that story, let's call in Wally Ballou aboard that boat.
Ballou, in the wheelhouse of the sitting duck, which now has made quite a bit of distance.
There you go, 213.
There you go, 213. Between the Narrows and the pier on the North River.
All in two-thirds.
Two-thirds now, where we're going
all
to...
All
in Captain Gibbs is still at my side and has taken over the wheel. What are you doing now, Captain?
Steering.
And you're going to turn, make a right turn up here, is that right? Is that Navy lingo or seafaring talk?
You mean right, left turn?
Yeah.
No, not really. That's automobile lingo, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But, no, we turn port or aft or starboard.
Well, now you're aiming for that little pier there.
That's the aim now, not the pier, beside it.
Uh-huh.
There's a little body of water there between the two piers, and I'm going to try to squeeze the sitting duck in there and let the people get off.
How many people do you have passengers aboard right now?
Well, we mostly have bananas here,
uh-huh.
But we have four or five folks who came along for the trip. They're all executives of the banana company.
I understand that's quite a pleasant way to travel, and inexpensive, too.
What?
The banana boat. Now we're in, I'd say, about 50 feet from the dock. And what is that you're doing now, Captain? Oh, taking a drink of water. How long will it be before the bus comes to a complete halt?
As soon as it starts.
Oh, I hit the pier there. Now, that's a mistake.
Do they mind when you do that, the people that own the pier?
Well, they're covered. We may have insurance to cover that. But they don't like it, though. They'd rather we didn't. Now I'm ringing the bell.
What does that signify?
Nothing special. It's something to do while I'm waiting for the boat to kind of work itself free here. This is the worst,
Captain.
Yes, I think it's being on
Captain.
The air. Yes.
I was leaning over the side just as you brought the boat into a stop, and I was had the microphone.
You better get out.
I have my fingers not completely. I think Wally Blue returning you to.
Again, we return to Wally Blue, who is, I assume, still aboard the great ship Sitting Duck. Come in, correspondent Wally Blue.
Wally Blue, standing here at the edge of the deck, with my finger still caught between the dock and the side of the Sitting Duck, which pulled in here to New York just a while ago. Captain, what are the chances of moving the vessel so that I can extricate my finger?
Well, I'll,
There's no pain or anything.
No, it's just a case of being stuck there in the morning.
Right, and it's kind of awkward to carry on a radio broadcast in this shed.
Ben, will you move the boat a little bit up there, please?
One third.
Yeah, back about a third.
All engine afterhead, one third.
One third.
Right 15 degrees, brother. Right 15 degrees.
That should do it, because be sure they're going the right way now, away from the dock.
Right, 15.
Yes. Be sure you're going away from the dock.
200.
Wow.
There you go, 213.
Okay. Did you get your finger out?
Yes, I did.
Okay, you can bring it back in. Now it's
boy, that's much better.
Any other questions now before you leave?
No, I don't believe so. How's the chow of this vessel?
So the food's all very good here. At sea, you have a great appetite. And although we had a rather hectic landing, I do hope that you and your great crew will pay us a call again whenever the Sitting Duck comes back to port.
Well, we certainly hope
so. I'm awful sorry that this happened.
Oh, forget it, Captain.
I think the entire crew is nervous.
Oh, that's...
No,
radio. Nobody's fault but my own. I shouldn't have had my finger down there between the ship and the dock anyway.
Knowing that you radio people were aboard, I think probably affected the crew. But again, thank you, and we hope that you always consider the Sitting Duck as kind of a second home.
Well, we'll certainly do that, Captain. And it's been a pleasure talking to you and to all of the men of the Sitting Duck.
Anchor's away.
What?
Anchor's away.
That's so.
No, I'm giving a signal to drop anchor.
Oh, and this is Wally Ballou returning you to New York.
Hey, maybe you've read in the papers recently where in New York they had the talking mailbox. Well, that set us looking around town, and we came across something that we thought might be just as interesting. Not far from Times Square is a talking soft drink dispensing machine, and we went there with our microphone. And would you spin that tape now so we can all hear it? Hello, everybody. I'm standing in front of a talking soft drink machine, and I wonder, sir, if you could explain a few things to us.
Your order, please.
What flavors do you have in there?
We have imitation strawberry, imitation cherry, imitation cola, and very bad imitation chocolate drink. I don't advise the last one.
Well, do I put a nickel in, a dime, or 15 cents, or how much is it?
It's 10 cents for each one except the imitation chocolate. That's 15.
I see. So I would put a dime and a nickel in.
Would you repeat that question, please?
Would I put a dime and a nickel in the machine?
If you had it. If you want change, put a quarter in, and there's a slight charge for that. You'll get 20 cents back.
You charge a nickel in for making change?
That's right.
Is it rather cramped back in there, sir?
No, I'm a small person of small build, so that it's not too difficult. What are you, from out of town or something?
Yes, I'm a stranger here, sir. This is the first time I've been by this talking.
May I suggest the imitation caller favor?
How much is that?
That'll be 10 cents.
All right, where do I put the money? Right over here?
Right up there by my left shoulder.
I see. Where's the soft drink, sir?
Where's the cup?
Well, you mean I have to bring my own cup?
Naturally. It doesn't work unless there's a cup under there.
Oh, I...
Are we going to waste all of this imitation strawberry, imitation cherry?
Who's imitation cola, sir?
I know, but any one of the imitation flavors, you think we're going to waste them?
Well, I...
Without a cup down there?
Well, I didn't know I had a...
Three.
Well, I'm not going to walk around town with my own cup, sir, thank you.
Learn the ways of the big city, fella.
All right, I didn't come here to be insulted. It's been nice talking to you.
Nice to do business with you.
Do I get money back now?
No, that's gone. I'm sorry.
Do you work 8 hours, or...?
An 8-hour shift, and then I have a relief come on.
Is he a small man, too?
He's a little bit taller than I am. He has to kind of scooch down.
I see. Well, it's been nice talking to you, sir. Friends has taken you to a talking soft drink dispensing machine.
American Industry on the march. To Wally Ballou now in Harper's Ferry, New York. Come in, please, Wally Ballou.
Please. Blonde, blue-eyed Wally Ballou speaking from Harper's Ferry, New York. Home of the Waukesha Glass Fruit Factory. Makers of some of the most beautiful centerpieces that grace America's dining table. We're speaking with the president and founder of this concern. And first of all, Mr. Bosman, I think it's interesting to ask you this. Why do you call this the Waukesha Glass Fruit Factory when you're actually in Harpers Ferry, New York?
Well, this plant originally opened in Waukesha, Wally. And several years ago, we moved it here to Harper's Ferry because it was closer to my mother's house.
I see. And the factory has been here for some 23 years, I understand. Now, turning out all manner of grapes, peaches, pears, apples.
Spanish melons,
cantaloupes.
Bananas.
Watermelons.
And breadfruit.
Apricots, too?
Yes, we make almost any kind of vegetable that you can think of. We've gone through several of the famous... vegetable and fruit catalogs, and I think we've covered them all. That is the kind of fruit and vegetables that people want to have on their table.
I was going to ask you if the trend of glass fruit and vegetables changes over the years. For instance, today, are people buying as many glass apples as they were, say, 10 years ago?
Yes, people are buying more glass apples today than they were 10 years ago. Now, you take this one here. This is a Red Delicious. Now, this is made
like
out
to
of...
Look
a...
at that. It's a work of art, certainly.
It's made out of very... thin. You'll have to be more careful there.
I didn't need to drop that. It was slippery as you handed it to me.
See, that represents a neat paper loss now of almost $50 to me.
Are all of these hand-painted?
No, not all of them are hand-painted, Wally. Some of these, of course, are mixed in. The color is mixed in with the molten glass.
I see.
And then we have, of course, our highly paid personnel, the glass blowers, who will take this molten glass and to blow it into the apples and the bananas.
I should imagine that the bunches of grapes like this one here are the most difficult to manufacture. I notice a look of ashen horror on your face there, sir.
On my rugged features, you mean?
Yes, I did.
Well, I'm pretty upset about this, Ballou. I think you can take your microphone and get out of here now before you spoil the whole thing for me.
All right.
This is going to be a wonderful opportunity for me to talk about my products coast to coast.
Well, it has.
I'll never, never realize in actual return what I've lost here today.
No, financially, you have suffered a setback.
I've taken a bath.
You certainly have. And this is Radio's Blonde Blue-Eyed Wally Ballou.
Oh, watch it, will you?
I'm just taking my microphone out, sir.
Well, through the door.
Well, Bob, it's that time again. The finals of the Bob and Ray Annual Grand National Spelling Bee Contest. Do you happen to have the regional winners there?
Our three regional semifinalists arrived in New York this past week. And I wonder if you would just step up to our microphone and identify yourself. You are?
I'm Helen Ross.
Fredericksburg, Maryland.
And thank you, Miss Ross. You're the winner from the Middle Atlantic State, is that
right? That's right.
And Russell Flume, are you here?
Russell couldn't be here.
Well, Russell was the Southern State's...
What are you going to say?
Well, I know, but he was the champion speller down there. Well, who are you, sir?
I'm Benjamin Franklin. I'm from Altoona, Pennsylvania, and I'm going to substitute for him.
Well, who do you represent, the Southern
States? I'll represent the Southern States, all right, if I may.
And our last contestant from the West Coast.
Paul G. Revere.
Paul G. Revere.
Elmont, Utah.
All right, sir. Now, you two gentlemen and the lady are the regional winners, and as you know, we're going to give you one round of words here in the first go-round in our national semifinals. If you answer correctly, in other words, if you spell your word correctly, you will hear. And, of course, if you answer wrong, it's... No, it's not that. That's it. Now, the words will be chosen out of this barrel, which has been turned over, so they're all mixed up. And I think we'll let our lady go first. Miss Ross, will you pick... your first word.
All right.
Add it to me, please.
There you are.
Your word, Miss Ross, is Paleolithic.
Paleolithic.
Pertaining to an era in the development of this earth.
Capital P-A-L-E-O. Paleo. L-I-T-H. I-M.
Oh, I'm sorry. The last letter should have been C, Miss Ross. But better luck next time in the second round. Let's move along to Mr. Flume, or rather to Mr. Flume's proxy.
Franklin.
Mr. Benjamin Franklin, will you reach in and we'll have to move right along. Hand me the word, if you will, please.
Okay, there you are.
The word you have chosen from our barrel of words is interfenestration, the spacing of windows.
Interfenestration, I-N-T-E-R-F-E-N-E-S-T-R-A-T-I-O-B.
Oh, no. You missed by one letter, Mr. Franklin. It was N. The last letter, N. I'm sorry.
Right.
You'll take your seat next to Miss Ross and our final semifinalist here.
Mr. Revere, Elmont,
Mr. Revere,
Utah.
Elmont, Utah. Will you hand me your word?
Certainly.
Your word is the interrogative who.
Well, wait a minute.
Wait, Miss Ross. What? Give him a chance.
Well, I had a real tough
I'm
one.
I'm sorry, but...
So did I.
Please, you choose your own words, as you know.
Who? W-H-O.
Who is right.
Well,
and
what
so
kind of a badger game Paul is
this? The winner of round one.
I get Paleolithic.
Semifinal.
He gets interfenestration.
And we'll be back with round two in just a little while. And here we go with our second go-round, the deciding go-round in our Grand National Semifinal Spelling Bee with our three regional champions, Miss Ross, Mr. Revere, and Mr. Franklin.
Easy word doesn't mean it's phony.
Our contestants are still bickering among themselves about the unfortunate fact that they drew, two of them drew hard words in the first round and one drew an easy word. Remember, for right spelling, it's N, for wrong spelling. Here we go with our second round, and our lady, Miss Betsy L. Ross, is first.
Right.
Will you reach into the barrel, which has been spun, to certainly mix up the words chosen scientifically, and hand it to
there
me.
There you are.
This time, Miss Ross, and this is the deciding word for you, your word is propinquity, or a nearness.
Propinquity?
Propinquity.
Well, how come he got who, and I get
well,
words
let me
like
remind
that?
You picked the word yourself, ma'am. Let's play the game fairly.
I've
all
never heard
sports.
Of what's it mean?
It means a nearness or a...
Propinquity. P-R-O... P-I-N... G?
No, it looks like a G sometimes when... Wait,
oh,
some H, people write.
Sure.
Yeah, it's wrong, though, the way you spelled it. So I'm afraid you're out, Miss Ross, but our congratulations on putting up a good fight.
I didn't put up any good fight. I'm just trying to save my skin.
Let's move now to the regional champion from the South, being represented by proxy, Mr. Benjamin Franklin.
I go along with Miss Ross to a degree. It seems like she and I drew the long straws.
Well, you did get a difficult word as opposed to an easy one for Mr. Revere in the first round.
I'll take
we'll see if you do any better this time, sir.
Oh, okay, sir.
You have chosen the word proximity.
Proximity.
Closeness.
Closeness.
Go right
ahead. That's a pretty difficult word, too.
Go ahead, Mr. Franklin.
Proximity. P-R-O-X. I-M-I-T...
No, you were going to spell it wrong, I could tell. P-R-O-X-I-M-I-T-Y would be your word, and that
means you could tell he was going to spell it wrong.
Means,
you had that the bunker going before he got out two letters. I don't
West
know
Coast
what's
champion,
going on
Mr.
here.
Paul G. Revere can spell his word correctly. He remains.
Who loses there, Mr. Elliott?
That's right, they are, Mr. Revere.
Yes.
You've chosen your word, and if you spell it correctly, that means you are the standard bearer, the champion in
right.
our semifinals. We'll go on to our final round later to be held here in New York.
All right, sir.
Word you have chosen is far, the opposite of near or close.
Well, wait a minute.
Go ahead, Mr. Revere, if you will.
Are you related or what?
Please, Mr. Ross.
Far.
Be polite.
F-A-R.
That is right, and I want to congratulate you, and I know Ray does, too.
You bet I do.
Having been... tell us what you do, Mr.
Well, I
Mr.
have
Revere.
I own a theater out there in Elmont.
That's right, and one of the most popular ones in Elmont, I understand.
We're certainly looking forward to you two fellows when you come out there
well,
in a
couple
of weeks.
We certainly appreciated the booking when we heard from you. Thanks for being on our semi-final spelling bee, and you'll go along to the final, and I would think your luck will be pretty good, Mr. Revere. Best of luck to you.
Thank
anyway.
You. It's been wonderful being here with you.
Well. Wally Ballou is covering a convention this week here in New York over at Fraternal Hall. He's standing by now, where he is about to interview some of the folks who have showed up for this annual National Marvin Convention. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
Wally Ballou here at Fraternal Hall, where we're speaking with some of the genial gentlemen assembled here in New York for 4 days at the National Marvin Convention. One of the officers of the group is here standing beside me. I wonder if you'd tell us first your full name, Marvin.
My name is Marvin Lafferty.
And where do you hail from?
Wilmette.
But just outside Chicago.
That's right.
Marvin, tell me when this organization first formed and what the aims and purposes of it are.
Well, we first formed the Marvin group right after the last international misunderstanding about 1946 and 7, and we've been meeting every year since then.
Do you pick a different city every year to hold your Marvin convention, or?
Yes, we do.
And I suppose you hit some of the big ones. Des Moines?
No, we never did hit Des Moines. We've hit some of the larger cities, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Detroit.
San Francisco?
No. Uh-huh. Los Angeles,
uh-huh.
Sacramento.
Seattle?
No. Buffalo?
Eugene, Oregon?
No.
Well, now, are all of the Marvins here present at this convention?
No, they couldn't all be here. You see, the purpose, actually, for founding this organization was to protect the name Marvin from jokes and be ridiculed.
Well, of course, we certainly don't want to make any sport of it, because that is the purpose of your meeting here. It's a very fine name, and I think you're accomplishing something, at least, by calling all of the Marvins together.
Well, we get as many Marvins as possible. Now, those with the last name Marvin, of course, are not included.
No.
That eliminates a lot of Marvins, but just the first name.
How many Marvins would you say are here now?
In this room right now?
Standing around here.
Well, some of them have gone out to lunch. You want me to count them?
Well, yes, they're here for the convention. You might as well include them.
Well, 12.
How many are out to lunch? Are you including
the
ones out
to lunch? Including the ones out to lunch.
So here there are about 7. There's about 5 Marvins out to lunch.
That's
now.
Right. 5 of them. They're out to lunch, and the 7 are just milling about here.
And
we have one lady member.
A lady named Marvin.
Yeah.
It's quite unusual. I hope that you have a very successful 4 days here in New York, and that you'll be able to work a little fun in with the business.
Now, there'll be no fun. We don't have time for it. We're here for business, and that's what we're going to do, Wally. And although a lot of the Marvins who are here present would like to more or less go on the town, I just have to veto that.
Uh-huh.
We're here for business.
You have to...
Our meetings open at 8:30 in the morning, and we close up about 9 at night. We're all pretty tired.
Pretty long day's agenda. Well, thanks very much, Mr. Lafferty, and it's been a pleasure talking to you and hearing something about this little known organization. Once again, with the distinguishable measures of his theme, The Farmer in the Dell, it's time for the Bob and Ray Agricultural Director and leader at the Lackawanna, New York Field Station, Dean Archer Armstead. Dean, This being midwinter, I can't imagine what brings you to New York in the way of farm program.
Well, Bob, I've come down here to answer several pieces of mail that I received from the station.
The questions that have...
Thought I'd take this opportunity to answer them on the radio.
Certainly be glad to go into any problems that the midwinter gardener may have. Dean, what's the first one concerned with?
The first one is concerned with the care of the lawn while covered with snow.
Care of the lawn while covered with snow.
Snow.
Well, just what care can you give a lawn when there are several inches of snow on it?
Well, that's basically the problem. Although just because the lawn is covered with snow, it doesn't mean that we should forget it entirely. But certain things can be done once the snow begins to melt. I suggest the scattering of seed in the later part of
February,
or in March, if the snow is still on the ground.
So that the moisture of the snow as it melts and aerates into the earth will carry with it the seeds which will freshen up the lawn for spring.
Oh, dry up. Let me see.
Now, let's get to the second point here. Our time isn't too
moisture
long.
Of the air and the moisture of the snow. I'll answer the questions.
This one is a trailing arbutus problem that a listener has. And they'd like to know just when would be the best time to prune the arbutai.
Well, but the time to prune arbutai would be, of course, in the fall. However, it isn't catastrophic.
Too late now?
It isn't catastrophic if you forget to do it in the fall.
You can
do it in the spring, of course. The only thing is that I would hesitate in pruning the arbutai as far back in the spring as I would in the fall.
Oh, it's not quite as short as in the fall.
Big,
I think we've covered about as many questions as we can, Dean. I hear your theme creeping in over there. And I certainly hope that your next visit will see the leaves budding on the tree, the grass sprouting through the ground, and your spring thoughts of farming ever fresh in our minds. Down from his rocket launching center in Herkimer, New York, Professor Groggins, who you're well familiar with, I think, Professor... what's new in the realm of space travel?
Well, Bob, it's been a long time since I first started this rocket venture. I might point out, too, that it's the first time that I've been interviewed, I think, here in person. Usually, that controversial man you have on your staff, Wally Ballou, interviews me.
WW was planning to go up to Herkimer. Then we understood you were in New York. Now, is this something secret, or can you tell us a little bit about...
I'm here in New York on no real secret mission, Bob. I'm down here to try to get more money for the fund I have.
Well, this is the fund to finance your rocket ship to the moon?
I've run into so many problems there that I couldn't possibly have anticipated.
How much money have you spent so far? May I ask that question?
Oh. Well, it's shocking when you think how much money I've put into this thing. It's over $300.
Well, I know. From Ballou's report, you have the completed ship.
Well, the problems that I mentioned, I had to tear up the linoleum, you remember, and put down tile.
Yes.
That was a thing I hadn't planned on. The motors, of course, I had to change. I found out that the lawnmower wasn't strong enough. That I had to get a more powerful generator motor. Something like that.
Well, now, here in New York, have you contacted banks or lending institutions?
I've gone to banks, but I just don't like being pushed around this way. I have to go from one man to another, and they all seem to wink and laugh at each other as though I'm kind of a nut.
When do they start that? As soon as you say you're building a rocket?
Rocket to the moon. Mm-hmm. They say, "Is that so?"
And they wink and laugh.
They wink, and they call over. Somebody come over and get a load of this, they'll say.
Bob, if I might interrupt for a moment, I think if I carried on the interview at this point, knowing the background of his experiments, I might be able to worm a little more out of him. Well, all right. Here is W.W. Ballou of the Bob and Ray staff. Professor, the last time I saw you, you were loading the rocket ship with a special fuel.
That's right. I'm awfully glad you mentioned that, Wally. And Sally, it's a pleasure to see you again.
Nice to see you, sir.
That's right. Now, that fuel didn't work out. I thought maybe solid fuel would be the answer, but I'm afraid I'll have to stick with liquid fuel.
Well, by solid fuel, you refer to coal or coke?
Wood.
Wood. And that didn't work out. It didn't create the energy necessary to get the thing off the ground.
It created enough energy, but I had to keep constantly watching it. I had no time to
enjoy measurements.
Enjoy the trip.
Enjoy
the scenery. So that I had to rule Wood out. I don't know whether Bob has told you, Wally. I'm here in New York going about to banks and lending institutions seeking money so that I can further this trip.
I'm glad you brought up this point, Professor. What is the reaction been when you have approached a bank or lending institution?
Well, it hasn't been good. I pointed out to Bob there earlier that they seem to think I'm a little wacky, that I'm not worthy of a loan. So I've pretty much given up on it.
Do you point out your technical qualifications? By that I mean...
Yes, a high school graduate.
That's worth $49,000, I see, in matchbook covers.
That's right. I like science. I read a lot about science books, and I think I'm quite capable of going to the moon. And if they don't want to back me up, then there's much I can do about it.
Well, I'm certainly sure there'll be enough people who will realize the importance of your work and will be contacting you in Herkimer.
What I want to get some money for now is I'd like to get a new suit.
Right.
And I'd like to get a pair of shoes. And I thought maybe a haircut before I left.
Swell. Thanks very much for dropping... You dropped your copy of Disneyland magazine.
Right.
Thanks for dropping by, and our great wishes for success to Professor Groggins.
Time now to check with Bob and Ray's official weather forecaster, stationed atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire. At the Bob and Ray Weather Observatory. If you're standing by up there by the microphone, Cliff, would you come in, please?
Stations of the season to you, too, Dale. And I might say we're having very enjoyable weather.
Well, Cliff, I wonder what the outlook is for skiers. And generally, what would be your prognostications for the rest of the winter preceding the vernal equinox?
What was that again, Dave?
What's the weather?
We look for pretty generally good weather for the rest of the winter. A little bit of snow, some warm days, and some cold ones, too, I might add.
How is the snow picture there now?
The snow picture is out of focus at the moment, Dave. I can't see much beyond the area of our weather station. As you know, we're situated in rather a gulch just below the top of the mountain.
I understand.
Affording us not a very good view. In fact, no view at all of the skiing area.
Well, Cliff, I don't think we planned it that way. We were to call on you...
It was the best place we could get, Dave, right here in the gulch.
Well, I know, but we can't get a very accurate picture of the snow and all, which is your reason for being there.
That's what Mrs. Fleming was saying to me the other day. You can't get a very accurate picture, Dave, of the ski conditions, for one thing...
Yeah.
From your vantage point in the gulch there.
Where's the old lady now?
She's away, Dave. And has been enjoying a few days' rest. She had that mountain fever, you know.
I know, it comes on.
That's right.
But the symptoms of that is what, you whistle between each word?
Whistle every few words like that to demonstrate.
Uh-huh. Yes. You haven't had this fever now for a long time.
Not for over a year and a half, Dave.
Uh-huh. Well, then, to sum up, the weather then would be typical of this season, right?
Just about.
Uh-huh.
Little bit of everything.
Good. Okay, you were listening to Cliff Fleming. Cut the microphone, please. You're listening to Cliff Fleming, Bob and Ray's official weather forecaster, stationed atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Here now are two of our musical friends, the world of entertainment, Claude and Clyde McBeebe, the McBeebe twins and their orchestra. And fellas, I presume you're appearing somewhere in the local environs here.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Well, you're not
appearing.
At the environs.
Well, just what brings you into New York? Usually there's some professional engagement that brings you to these parts.
That's right. We are playing
in a nightclub.
You just picked the wrong one.
Oh, you mean when I said the environs? Well, I just meant that as the local area. Where will you be appearing, McBeebies?
We'll be playing at the Great Barn,
which is in Queens. I don't believe I've ever heard of it. Is that Western type atmosphere, or that's pretty popular these days, I guess?
No, it's rock and roll.
Well, that seems to be a new departure for the McBeebe group. I know last time you were advocates of Sweet Swing and bringing back some of the old songs. You've changed then.
Well, we have to get with it. We can't go playing those la-di-da songs and slowly starve. We have to get with it, so to speak.
So to speak. Mm-hmm. Well, in other words, you're keeping up with the trends, and I'm sorry that...
We're keeping up with the trends.
Sorry you don't have a record with you today so that we can get an idea of the new sound of the McBeebies, but maybe in a week or two we might be able to latch on to that.
He was supposed to bring a record.
Who?
Hey.
You mean Claude?
Well,
no.
Him. That one.
Well, I guess you're confused. Evidently, there was a mix-up. One or the other of the two men was supposed to bring a record. I'll tell you what, why don't you drop back next week, and we'll definitely promise to play your new style.
All right. Thanks again, Bob and Ray. That's his right name.
Thank you, Claude and Clyde McBeebe, the McBeebe twins and their orchestra, for your musical visit today. Ray, isn't it time for our phone call of the week to one of our friendly stations along the line?
Yeah.
To discover what the top song is. Today, we're dialing one of our neighbor stations, WTOK-FM, in the Great Green Mountain State. We hope to be talking with the head disc jockey there. The phone is ringing right now in any moment. Hello. Bob and Ray calling from New York. Is this Franklin Barnstorp at WTOK-FM?
Yes, it is.
Franklin, we called to find out what your top song out there this week is in the Great Green Mountain State.
Gee, you couldn't have picked the worst station to call.
What do you mean by that, Frank?
Well, we don't play any records or any music.
You must play something. You must have some kind of music of a sort on.
No, we have a Star Spangled Banner when we sign on, and then we...
Yeah, but everybody plays records nowadays.
No, you see, we're a hi-fi talk station.
Well, what do you mean by that, Frank?
Well, we talk all the time. We have the mayor and the school committee and professors and kids and people. We just talk. We have...
There's no music on your station? No discotheques or anything?
We don't have any music.
What are you, the head talker, then?
That's right. I'm chief talker, and I arrange a lot of the talk programs.
Well, this is an unexpected development, but as long as we're on the line, can you tell us what the top talk show this week was?
Yes, it was delivered by the head of the sanitation department here. He delivered a 20-minute talk on it.
Wonderful. Okay, Franklin Barnstorp, I'm sorry we can't play the top talk
record. I'd be glad to send you a tape recording of it
maybe,
if you'd like to.
Well, maybe next week we could
do
it.
About 20 minutes in length,
well,
and it's a lot of high-pressure stuff in there.
Well, it would be... A little bit long for the...
Holy language.
I know. Well, thank you anyway, Frank, and keep up the good work up at WTOK there in the Green Mountain State.
Thank you very much, and good luck to you.
A lot of fun talking to you. Give our best to the staff.
If you want to talk for a while, come on up here someday.
Okay, Frank. Righto.
Bye.
Well, we've made another call. Unfortunately, we didn't get a hit song out of that, but maybe someday we can play his record, huh?
Industry on the march. Now to Wally Ballou at Dover, Delaware.
Dover, Delaware. Wally Ballou speaking from the Furtive Greeting Card Company, and we're chatting with the president of the concern, Mr. Pauline Furtive. First of all, Mr. Furtive, I might mention that...
Now, you can call me Pauline if you want.
Isn't that rather an unusual name for
Furtive?
President of a greeting card company?
Well, it's our name, of course. It probably carries some overtones that people wouldn't understand, Furtive greeting cards.
I meant Pauline as a first name.
What about it?
Isn't that kind of unusual for you, a big, stabbing 8-foot, well, 6-foot-8 greeting card executive?
Well, I don't know why not. My aunt was named Pauline.
Well, that would probably explain
where I got the name.
The family name. You're going at full tilt here at Furtive.
And I wonder if you'll tell us just what you're doing.
These are Christmas cards, and they're all printed with the person's name or names. Who ordered them. And we have various, of course, messages and designs here, and they're all done in 4 or 5 colors.
They're beautiful things to look upon, Mr. Furtive.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sure that the people who receive them, the
recipients... I wish you wouldn't smoke in here.
I beg your pardon. I'll put it out on the floor.
Thank you.
I am sure I can understand your worry there with all of this paperwork going on and all of the...
Well, I hate to throw a cloud on the interview that way, but it's something...
I usually do my interviews with a cigarette in my hand.
Well, you're not going to do this one.
No, well, I've put it out on the cement floor there.
Right.
Now, the people who have ordered these cards will, of course, be calling around probably by the end of the week to pick them up, get them addressed, and in the mail.
No, what we're shooting for is the 22nd of December. We hope to have them in the mail to the folks who bought them so that they have, well, 3 days to address them and get them out to their friends and relatives. So,
well, I have heard that greeting card companies work almost a year ahead. But here you are working up about 3 days ahead of Christmas.
That's what we're shooting for, the 22nd. Last year, fortunately, we got them out on the 21st, but I don't think we can match that record
this year.
Can't
do quite that well this year. You think that will give the people enough time to get them into the mail, much less have them delivered?
Well, my concern is getting them out to them before Christmas. Now, I don't care what they do with them. So long as my cards arrive at their home before Christmas, I'm happy.
You're happy,
you
I
get
see.
It?
How about your own Christmas cards, Mr. Furtive? Have you got them all in the mail?
Mine, yes. My wife takes care of that. They're all mailed about the 15th.
I see. Well, it looks like you're going to have a year-end rush here, and then, of course, the slacking-off period after the first of the year. But next year, the same thing, and the year after again and again, for many years to come, we hope. And our thanks for talking into our microphone here from Dover, Delaware.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you down here, Mr. Ballou, and I hope that we've been able to fill America in on the great Christmas card printing thing.
I certainly hope so. Now, this is Radio's Wally Ballou returning up to what?
I'm just talking to myself. I do that.
There's a light on the table. I guess Wally is ready downstairs.
Okay, so with that, then, let's call in Wally Blue, who's down on the street somewhere. Wally, can you hear us and come in?
Hello, speaking from the street somewhere where we're doing our regular man in the street program. However, it's a little bit empty down here right at the present moment. Nothing much but taxi cabs, trucks, automobiles. And this fellow parked over here in a big pumpkin coach. It's a big, great, big pumpkin. Can I speak to you a minute, fella?
Certainly you may. I'm just sitting here in my pumpkin coach.
How long have you had this pumpkin coach?
Oh, ever since my fairy godmother gave it to me.
Your fairy godmother gave you this pumpkin coach?
Yes, years ago.
What for? Anything special?
I was going to, a banquet, and I didn't have any automobile to get there, and so my fairy godmother appeared at the front door.
You're a Scotch, aren't you, sir?
No, sir, but sometimes my diction gets funny.
I see.
Go
ahead with your story. I notice you've got a glass slipper out there, too.
Glass shoe.
Slipper.
It's a shoe.
Where'd you get that?
She gave it to me. I had on a pair of old army shoes, and with a touch of a wand, she transformed them into glass shoes.
Are you trying to make me believe all this stuff?
Well, you asked me the question. I was just sitting here watching the people pass by, and I didn't certainly...
I am.
Sure, come on in. Well, I want you to get in and try this.
Well, I don't believe a bit of your story. I'll have to find something more interesting to talk about.
Goodbye.
I'd like to have a ride that coach someday.
No, sir, you don't believe me. You won't ride in it if you don't believe me.
Hey, did you know there's 2 white mice on the back of it?
Yes, they're the footmen.
You're crazy.
Sure I am.
Wally Ballou, returning you to Bob and Ray.